I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for coming tonight.
We've got a number of great presentations. Before we go through the presentations, as those of you know who were at the meeting last week, 2 weeks ago,
3 weeks ago,
Kristen, Vice President of the Board, resigned. She had some family issues and time issues that she needed to focus on. So we talked through that at the last meeting, and her resignation was effective on February 20th. So while we're certainly sad to see her go, and the knowledge that she brought to the board and the help that she provided to us, we have an enormous amount to do in the next 6 months between kind of figuring out what to do with the bond and certainly the budget, which is first and foremost, and the education plan. To that end, we've spoken to a number of people who have reached out to us as board members to express interest. There's three options that the board can do. The board can not do anything with regard to the slot and function with four board members to the end of the year, at which point there would be an election for Kristen's position. The board can hold a special election now, which with 4 months left is costly and, in my view, probably not the wisest use of dollars. Or the board can appoint somebody to fill out the remainder of the year, and then that role would then be up at the next election. So what would happen would be if we appointed somebody now, that person would sit, would be an active board member with the same rights and voting responsibilities as the rest of the board, and then that term would expire on May, or what is it, June 30th?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, July.
The person that runs for the remainder of that position is appointed the next day, the day after the election.
Right.
And term runs till June 30th of 2016.
So if we appoint somebody tonight, that person sits until the end of this year's term, June 30th. Thereafter, they would have to run, or somebody else would run. The positions are open.
The term would be until the date of the budget vote.
Oh, the day after.
The day after.
Saying they immediately take office. You're saying that.
Right.
Day after.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, at the meeting the day after when we accept the results of the budget vote, whoever it runs for the remainder of that year assumes the position that day.
Right.
And of that term.
Yep, okay.
Thank you.
So it's a month difference. It's whether it be May 18th to June 30th, it's that period of time. So, in my view, we have an enormous amount to do, and we could certainly be assisted by somebody that could add something to our process and be another voice in the process. And a number of people have reached out. I've personally spoken with three different people that have contacted me, and I've asked other board members to speak with people that have reached out to contact. I know that we've done that. In my view, it makes the most sense to appoint someone rather than waiting and functioning with four or holding a special election. Does everybody on the board agree with that?
Yes, I do.
So the person that I've spoken with, that I feel the most comfortable with, and that I feel will look out for the best interest of the district in the ensuing 3 months, 4 months, whatever the math is, 2 months, March, April, May, is Robin Rayburn. I've had the opportunity to speak with her at length on a number of occasions, and I know that you've also spoken with her, Wendy.
Yes, I've known Ron for a while. Actually, I had to ask her to replace me when I was going to end my run, because I have known her for years and very thoughtful, intelligent person, so who I always thought would be good. And I like that our board has always had an educator's viewpoint on the board, so that's why I was interested in her. So when she was interested in stepping forward early, and you spoke to her as well, yes.
Okay, Gary,
I spoke with Robin as well.
comfortable. I think, you know, her education background will be a help since we lost Kristen's education background.
All right, Carl.
Very glad she's willing to step up and take the work on. We appreciate it.
So a little bit of information about Robin. Robin's got three children, two of whom are in the district. One is in pre-K, third, first, and pre-K. She's been an active participant in the district, including serving on site-based management teams. She's sponsored literacy events and co-chairing the PTA for the Innisbrook fundraiser. She's also on the PTA Kindergarten Committee, and she actually graduated from Center Riches High School. Pat, with regard to a motion, is it recommended action that, or how do we do it?
Yeah.
So,
recommended action that, on the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, Mrs. Robin Rayburn be appointed to fulfill the term
vacated
by Dr. Turner. And put the dates in.
Yeah, include the dates in there.
And then I can give her a packet to run for the...
Okay. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Next portion of the presentation meeting tonight, which is the superintendent's report.
Tonight we're going to start off with an exciting, heroic, I believe, award that Mrs. Bates would like to give out. Thank you, Mrs. Bates.
Good evening. I'm Melissa Bates, the middle school principal, and I am honored to be here tonight to recognize a middle school paraprofessional for their heroic act. Actually, 1 month ago today, on February 4th, while working the CHAMP program at Clayton Huey Elementary School, we are honoring Miss Janice Berry tonight, who's here with us. Before I get into what occurred on February 4th, I know Olivia is here tonight as well. Olivia, do you want to come up and join me while I recognize Miss Berry? Is a third grader at Clayton Huey. And before I recognize Miss Berry, I just thought I'd share a little bit from my perspective of who Miss Janice Berry is with Santa Maria School District. Miss Berry, for those of you that don't know her, is a paraprofessional at the middle school. She works predominantly in the task modifications room, working with students with special needs. But she can be seen doing a lot of things. Miss Berry also runs our breakfast program, so she's here an hour before school for students that have received free and reduced lunch, or anybody that wants to purchase breakfast, in the middle school. You'll see her loading the coach buses in May. She's a chaperone at Frost Valley and Washington, D.C. on both trips last year, and she'll be chaperoning both trips this year. You'll see her around the hallway picking up a piece of paper, comforting a student, helping a colleague. Everybody knows Miss Berry at the middle school. All the students, even if they don't receive test modifications, know Miss Berry. All the staff, all the parents. She is really an amazing paraprofessional and somebody who we just love having at the middle school. So with that said, I have to be honest, when I got wind of the story about what happened, when I said, who is the paraprofessional, I was not surprised at all to hear Miss Janice Berry's name, because that is just something that I could totally see her doing and happen. So what happened was, on February 4th, and you could jump in because nobody knows the story better than Olivia, but I was told that Olivia was sucking on a hard candy right at the CHAMP program, and actually presented, which I commend you for, Miss Berry with the universal sign for choking, and Miss Berry performed the Heimlich maneuver on Olivia and saved her life. She, two or three, right, we've said in the moment, she doesn't remember if it was two times or three times, we spoke about it because in the moment, but it came flying out of her mouth, and Miss Berry saved Olivia's life at the Heimlich maneuver. So I was so touched personally by the story, because actually I just told Olivia this story about a half hour ago when I was her age. I choked on a Now and Later, which is like a starburst, only bigger and harder, and the Heimlich maneuver was performed by me. Actually, my father performed it on me in the kitchen. And it's something that I remember vividly to this day, where I was standing, how it felt, that it shot out of my mouth and landed in the kitchen sink. I still remember all the details. And what I would say to Ms. Berry is that this young lady will remember you and that instance for the rest of her life. And you saved her life, you know, and that's really, I'm just getting emotional talking about it because that's why we're all here, you know. We're doing a presentation later, and it's just like, this is it. You know, this is what we're all here for, and you deserve to be commended, applauded, celebrated. I just want to give you a round of applause. For you. Read the certificate here. This says, a certificate of heroic achievement. The certificate is presented to Ms. Janice Berry for your heroic act on February 4th, 2015, for outstanding performance in the saving of a human life and your display of initiative and poise, as well as your composure and compassion. Santa Maria School District, 2014-15. You're welcome. I just want to add one more thing, if I could. Actually, I don't think anybody knows this, but Ms. Berry, the day after I heard, I called district office and made a recommendation to start an annual Paraprofessional of the Year award here in the Santa Maria School District, and you were the inspiration for that idea. And I just feel that, yeah, we have some paraprofessionals here tonight, and you really are... here is the president of the paraprofessionals unit here in the Santa Maria School District, and the paraprofessionals, in my opinion, are the unsung heroes of the Santa Maria School District. And if you have a child with special needs that have a paraprofessional works with, or if you know paraprofessionals, many of whom live in our district, you know exactly what I'm talking about, and they really are amazing people. I see it every single day, and this is one amazing example, but we see what the paraprofessionals do every day, especially for our students with special needs that need them most. And you impact the students' lives just as much as any one of us. So if the board and the superintendent could consider possibly a Paraprofessional of the Year award just to celebrate that amazing group of people, I would love that. So thank you, Mrs. Berry.
Okay, next we have Ms. Harwick and Ms. Seidelman, a presentation with our Lego League. So I will call Ms. Harwick.
That was awesome. I just ditto everything that you said. I think that was really incredible. Another incredible thing, and come on over here. I really have to commend Mrs. Seidelman as well as Mrs. Basil. I don't know if she's coming in with the team, but I have to say that the Lego League Club that was started a few years ago, the amount of hours that they put in, how many lunches that they give up, how many prep they give, if the kids are willing to come, they're willing to come. They are there before school. They are there after school. They even added a component where the third graders are coming in. And there was no extra time for that, so that just meant that more mornings had to be given to them. So just a major, major kudos to Mrs. Basil and Mrs. Seidelman for ensuring that this program is the success that it is. So I just want to give them a round of applause. I have to say I've had the good fortune of sitting through it several times. It is just absolutely wonderful. And so we were hoping that maybe the board would like to sit in the front row so that you can get the real feel for the hard work that these youngsters put in. All the research is conducted on their own. They put the pieces together on their own. They work very hard to revise and edit. And so I think you are just going to be as impressed as I was. And I will turn
over to Ms. Barry. Just to let you know, Lego is not only fun for the kids, it's fun for me too. I learn each year that I do it. Each year with the Lego tournament, there's a theme. This year's theme is world-class learning. So we have researched something to learn, but our learning curve went a little differently, and I'll have the presentation speak to that. Also part of our presentation, you'll see a big poster. Part of the tournament is also core values, the values that the students should be bringing, the children should be bringing to the tournament. So it talks about cooperation, being cooperative and competitive, working together, being friendly, and having fun. So you'll see a big poster, again, dealing with learning. Our poster is in the form of a crossword puzzle. So I'll have the kids do their presentation. Sarah Triumphal, Sarah Turnell, questions for the team on their research or anything?
Great job, both learning, study learning. It was great on the vocabulary, especially you and yours, but all everybody had great vocabulary.
Thinking outside the box to come up with the question and the answer.
Yes, I thought it was great. A very creative choice and really good study.
And thank you to the board for always supporting the great things that happen in Clayton Huey. So great job, everyone.
Board of Education, we need to take a picture. We have somebody here from the yearbook. So if you can come on up and just your yearbook picture. Is that okay? What do you want?
Sure, this is fine.
You want it here or the truck?
Yeah.
You want it here or the truck?
Okay.
That's why we're waiting.
Thank you. You sit back up there.
Yeah, bring your presentations up.
If you were happy to be present at our last board meeting, each board meeting this year, we've kind of changed it up a little bit with the budget and our budget presentations. But the board gave the charge of administration tonight to basically look at the programs that we currently have. They would like us to improve them. They'd like us to enhance them with making sure that our focus is on the Board of Education goals. And to stay within the budget we already have at this point in time, not to go outside of the budget that they have. So that was a pretty serious charge. And every slide except for the last one, Board of Education, which I'll explain later, basically has done that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give the floor to the administration. What I would say to the board, if you have questions during the presentation, go ahead and ask. I would ask the community just to wait to the end, because we have about four or five people that are going to speak, and if all of us start asking questions, it could get quite lengthy in the middle. But Board of Education, of course, this presentation is for you and the community, but if you feel like you need to ask a question that's important at that time, by all means, just interrupt and we'll stop. Kind of by a backward by design model there, Mr. Castle. We're going to start with the high school principal and work our way from there. So, Mr. Castle, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. So we're going to start with the high school and drill down to the Clayton Huey Elementary School. And we're going to present our comprehensive plan to, like Mr. Stewart said, increase academic rigor and achievement while working under the constraints of a fiscally conservative budget and also attaining board goals. So that said, in all my orientations, whether they're East Mariches or 8th grade to 9th grade orientations, or any time I get a chance to speak to my students and parents, I always use the words opportunity and choices. That's our charge or prime directive here at the high school, and really at all levels, is to provide all of our students with as many opportunities and with many choices as they possibly can before they exit and move on to the next stage in their education. And additionally, as a caveat to that, we want to go beyond the minimum. And I've spoken to this already when we did our earlier presentation in the year. You know, New York State requires 22 credits to graduate. And we could, as a district, decide we'll be a 22-credit high school. That's the minimum. We want to maximize our opportunities. So, for example, many of our students, they graduate with 30-plus credits. That's a great example of opportunity and choice. This is my fifth year at Santa Maria's, and going back in time just briefly, my first year we had an eighth-period day. And I found that challenging to provide opportunities and choices. I had a nine-period day in my high school, both as a student and as a teacher. And I definitely saw the limitations of that. So I really pushed hard working with the board and to complete a full comprehensive program to fill a nine-period day, going from an eight to a nine-period day, looking at adding
possibly 6 to 7 full-time equivalents, or 6 or 7 teachers. And if you remember back 4 years ago, that's when we really started to have to really examine the budget closely. And we made some cuts, too. You may recall that. And Mrs. Turkington and Mrs. Logan probably remember the conversation directly when the board said, Mr. Caswell, we're going to give you a 9-period day. We're not giving any teachers because we can't right now. We want to, but we can't. So, Mr. Caswell, remember that? You point your finger at me and said, you need to maximize sections as possible. In English, bang for the buck, as we've heard before. But that's not a serious charge. So I'll give you some quick examples of what we were able to do with that charge and expectation. I mean, when I started at St. Richard's, we had one section of physics, and there was probably 9 kids there. Now we have 3 sections fully loaded. The business department was one of the lowest enrolled 4 years ago. Now it's one of the highest enrolled. In fact, I remember when I said, hey, I can hire a full-time additional business teacher with all the requests. So we were able to do that. However, it's still a challenge because we still have that gaping hole, and the board has always been cognizant of that. And I'll give you a great example because, in a tough budget, if we still managed to claw our way to a couple extra sections here and there. You may remember when we had Family Consumer Science, we had the requirement at the middle school that we had to meet, and luckily I was able to eke out 3 half-year classes. So we got 80 kids now taking food and culture when before the opportunity, they couldn't. So that's what I mean by, kind of clawing our way. So tonight you're going to see, working under that constraint of a fiscally conservative budget and that charge, but also at the end, like Mr. Stewart said, we all still have dreams and aspirations and expectations that we want to continue to build and offer, going back to that original opportunity and choice. So
that's why I wanted to make sure we get that in. So at the high school, we continue to stretch and maximize within the confines of our budget. So in a classroom, our goal is we want to maximize their schedule. We want kids to have full schedules as much as possible. And we want them to take some type of course that's going to lead them to what they always tell me every year I go into 8th grade, the first day in January, this year we did in December, I ask them right off the bat, as the first introductory to their new principal in the high school, hey, who wants to go to college? And everybody's like, yeah, I want to go to college. Well, in high school, they should at least have the opportunity, and they should take the challenge to take at least one college-level course, whether it's concurrent or advanced placement. So setting the stage this way now, this slide is a little busy, but I love the slide because it shows this notion of how we get kids to take the challenge, to take college-level courses, when they all want to go to college. Now, between 8th grade and 12th grade, maybe those numbers dwindle a little bit, but we really try to maximize the expectation and afford them the opportunity. So on the very left-hand column, there's our present concurrent offerings. That's a fancy word for it's as if a student's taking a concurrent college course, it's as if they're sitting in the college course in that cooperative college. We have a strong partnership with Excelsior, Suffolk Community College, and these are the classes we offer. We actually offer 2 new ones this year to continue that enhancement, state and local politics and economics. But we have, a nice offering there of college-level courses. And they're not taking an exit exam. They're taking a course, and they get a grade in the course. And if they meet those expectations, they open themselves up to the possibility of earning credit. Any of these college-level offerings in high school, they don't guarantee credit. It's a nice reward if it works out, but at minimum, they're taking more rigor, more challenge, and that's what we're looking for in our students. Yes, Mr. Turkington.
So does this replace the Syracuse University? Do we still have any
No.
goals?
Yeah, no. What we decided to do was, again, because the whole notion of a lot of our students go to sub community, it's a SUNY college, SUNY system, it just makes better sense to ensure that there's a better opportunity for them to get the credit upon graduation.
So economics and state and local politics used to be Syracuse.
Yes.
So
that we're crystal clear, the Excelsior courses and the credits that are provided for those courses are not solely able to be used at Suffolk.
They
are broadly accepted.
They're transferable within not only the SUNY system, but private institutions.
Right.
Again, not to put you on the spot, but your daughter who I you know, saw graduate, yep. you know, earns upwards of 30 credits at the University of Wisconsin.
And they were accepted at the University of Wisconsin, which is a tier one college.
That's a great story, but it doesn't guarantee that every student taking this is going to get credit. But the opportunity for rigor and challenge is absolutely there. So that's the Excelsior offerings. And currently in the next column, we have our advanced placement courses. And again, wide spattering. Whether it's art or language or, English language or history in mathematics and science. And again, the difference between AP and a concurrent college course is that there's an exit exam here. And also, it's a national standard. It's through the College Board. So students in Arkansas or Center Ridges are taking the same exact exam. They're preparing the same exact curriculum. And they're going to get the possibility of credit based on one test. So it's a different approach. Not to say better or worse, it's just a different approach. And at current, these are the courses that we have. So what does this all mean with the charge that Mr. Stewart described earlier? Well, we continue to try to stretch and claw our way to get more kids opportunities. So continuing the model of shifting from Syracuse to Excelsior, state, local government, and economics, we've looked at, Mr. Thoden and I, especially in some of the elective areas, looking at courses that we're offering currently and then somehow shifting them into Excelsior courses. It's kind of like a spiraling curriculum where we have our course offerings or elective offerings, and then we try to increase the rigor, and now we're going to offer a concurrent level course, and then eventually we're going to move on to the AP level course, and then maybe even beyond that, which I'll kind of plant the seed, is maybe we'll go into National Baccalaureate, that whole spiraling upward, continuing to increase the rigor within the system. So we can, these courses that are in the middle column now, we have applications in to an Excelsior program in Suffolk Community. Hopefully we're going to get accepted. Teachers have to apply, transcripts, records, recommendations, from the principal, et cetera. And we can take existing courses. We have design and drawing for production. We have ceramics. We have these courses that we offer as straight electives. So now we can perhaps now continue those courses, but now shift to a concurrent level, right? Also, I threw on that list as well. Starting this summer, I want to definitely research offering some type of self-sustaining SAT preparatory course. Like driver's education here is self-sustaining. Students are paying some fee to earn driver education privileges. And same would go with SAT as well. So we're going to look hard into that. Moving forward, that is kind of a five-year pathway. We're looking at now moving to the next level and trying to take some of our current classes and make them advanced placement and continue to add to the concurrent program as well. So if you see 16-17, we'd like the opportunity to then offer advanced placement economics, advanced placement psychology. It just makes logical sense because we have these at the Excelsior level, and now it just makes sense to prepare our teachers and prepare our students expectation-wise to offer these two. Again, all within the construct of the budget. We're not adding anything. We're trying to work within. And continuing going down the path of introducing more Excelsior courses. Again, we have an astronomy elective. Okay? We started astronomy as a half-year course a couple years ago. Now we made it a full-year course. Now we might be ready soon. Even maybe quicker than that, we can offer an Excelsior. So, again, the years may vary. We can probably add more even next year. It all depends on the application process. And if you look to the final column, in the 2016-17, I would definitely like to gather the faculty and our curriculum committee and take a look at International Baccalaureate. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that when Mrs. Bates speaks about the program in the middle school. But that's something that if the middle school is going to take the plunge, if you will, high school definitely wants to be prepared to take those students and move them forward to the program as well. We'll hear more about that in a few minutes.
That's a question for you, Wayne. So as you shift more of the current offerings to Excelsior courses, are there different qualifications for teachers to teach Excelsior courses? Do they take trainings or get certified? Or not?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Let me jump to AP for a second, advanced placement. There's no set forth requirement that you have to do X, Y, and Z to be an advanced placement teacher. But de facto, you want to have somebody that's qualified, and you want somebody that wants to do it, and has a passion for it. So you would want to provide professional development opportunities for College Board, workshops all over the place, including Long Island as well. It just makes common sense.
For subbing, interestingly, the concurrent programs, it's a little bit more difficult to get accepted because teachers have to go through certain requirements. The professors within each department actually gather and meet and discuss all the applications to make sure they pass muster, if you will, based on their qualifications. You may recall, we had a conversation over the summer when I submitted Mrs. Schiavone's applications, really at the 11th hour, and they were able to convene the social studies department, and they, obviously had strong qualifications, so they passed it through. And they don't require training, but they're really looking for a match in terms of your experience. And in any concurrent program, whether it's Syracuse or Delphi or whatever, you're not going to see many non-tenured or 4 or 5 year experienced teachers because they're really looking to match the experience with the coursework.
Sure. Just to add to that, for example, you'll see the music fundamentals and music theory. Mr. Conifrey is the application in for those, but we're being a little creative because he may not have necessarily the experience that they may want, but Mr. Preston, who's also a music teacher here, was an adjunct at the Suffolk Community College, so we're putting him on the application with Mr. Conifrey kind of as a buddy system so that will make it more appealing to the selection process.
Okay, so now, again, really going far out a couple of years, so 17 through 19, looking at continual goals, we would like to see other advanced placement courses offered here at Center of Riches, Spanish and French and music theory, but there are some issues we may have to try to resolve, like preparing students properly in the younger years to be able to handle the rigor of Spanish and French AP. It's a very, very difficult test. And Mrs. Bates is going to speak a little bit to that in middle school years. So we could start it like tomorrow, but we want to really be prepared, have our students more prepared, our teachers prepared. So that's something definitely we want to do. In Excelsior, we have some other courses I put on there that aren't necessarily courses that we're offering now, and there's some wrinkles there. So, for instance, we like culinary arts might stand out and say, wow, that looks really interesting. But you may recall, I just mentioned earlier, we have three half-year courses called Food and Culture. So, let's say I have 25 kids in each half-year course. That's 75 kids. Culinary arts is a full-year course. So if I offer that under the current construct with no other additional courses, I'm going to lose like 50 kids. Possibly. So, in the big picture, if we are able to balance, the schedule here at the high school, we can do something like adding culinary arts, and it won't hurt the overall opportunity and choice for our kids. Standard freshman composition as a college-level course offered through Excelsior. We don't have a mirrored course now, but that's something that I'd want to introduce. And again, if we can do it quicker than the years I'm stating, all the better to make that a reality. So, again, it's really continuing to work within the system. And we have the staffing and we have the passion behind it, and we want to make sure the students have those opportunities and choices. Now, also the board had charges with not only just looking at our courses, we looked at some activities outside of the classrooms, like clubs. So I gave you some examples of clubs that are currently running. And we're looking to increase, academic opportunities. Again, trying to meet board goals in every which way we possibly can. So within the confines of the budget, we're able to offer a couple more clubs. And I know Mr. Thode was very passionate about the pep band. As a dish, I'm not going to mention anything about that. But also on my end, I wanted to throw in some academic opportunities like an athletes and the bait. I think there are two academic indebted courses that could really benefit our students. And across the board, with regardless of adding any clubs, we want to embed an expectation throughout every single club of some type of research component, writing component. I can see every club contributing to whatever, district news and web pages, research for scholarship opportunities, some type of way to write and research, which are important skills, as we all know, for college and career readiness. If we get it into every single club at every level, I think that's definitely going to help. And again, you can hear similar comments from all the different levels of the schools as well. And moving forward, again,
if we got more money, great, and we'll talk about that later in the last slide, but if, you know, some clubs may not work out for whatever reason, whether the teacher retires and doesn't continue the club, or whatever the case may be, we definitely have other academic-based clubs in the wings, if you will, and I just listed them there quick, like chess and science, bowl, and history, environmental, and again, we're not tied to these SO, but these are some of the ideas that we present. And I think that's it for me. So, Ms. Bates, I'm going to turn this over to you. All right?
So just one more question. So
sure.
Maybe I missed it when you said it, but I know that you're not tied to 16 through 19. And at the beginning, we said, you know, everything in here doesn't cost us more. So 15, 16, the three clubs that you're...
I'm putting them in.
You're putting them in.
Putting them in.
Okay. How does that, how does that work?
I got green light from my superintendent. Putting them in.
Constraints of an entire budget.
Administrative. Okay.
Exactly. And we were able to put all three of those in.
Okay.
They're not as expensive as you think. Things like that are what, $1,000 a piece,
yeah.
maybe 1500.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but we were able to do it.
Great.
Are there any clubs dropped to make room for that?
Nope.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Good evening. Tonight, as Mr. Stewart stated, we're given the charge to enhance and improve our current program with say the confines of our budget. And when I began to sit down and look at the middle school, what's interesting and kind of unique to the middle school is that when you look at a middle school child today, it is all mandated. So that according to New York State, the middle school program that we offer is a mandated program, all components of it. Now you might ask, by keyboarding, for example, Ms. Bates, you added that last year. Is that mandated? That's not mandated, but that condition is of the library being a specialist in the library. So really, all in all, our middle school day is a mandated program. So when looking at it, you know, what do I have flexibility over and what can we improve and change, I was keying in on professional development. And we definitely increased professional development this year. To name a few great ones that stand out in my mind, I went on to professional development with Ms. Guardioso on interactive notebooks. She implemented that strategy beautifully in her classroom, and I really enjoy going to a professional development and then seeing it come to life in the classroom in seventh grade social studies if you have a child in that class. Last week, Mr. Schauer and I went on a professional development regarding acceleration in mathematics in the middle school level and the best way to do that. Last board meeting, vocabulary.com, we presented that idea came from a PD. So some great things going on at the middle school in the way of professional development this year, but really how do we focus that so we're all speaking the same language and looking at the same vision? And one of the professional developments that I've been researching is called the Middle Years Program. And it's a facet of the International Baccalaureate Program for middle level learners. So that's what I'm going to be presenting to you tonight. Now, as I said, the middle years program, often referred to as MYP, and that's what I'll refer to it as during my presentation, is for students ages 11 through 16, and it's a framework for teaching and learning. So in other words, you're teaching the same curriculum and looking at it through a different lens. And it is focused on professional development, and I just want to be clear before I go on to the Board of Education that right now we're in what International Baccalaureate refers to as the consideration phase. So that means that we're researching it. I'm setting up visits with colleagues, other middle school principals who have gone through the training and are implementing those best practices into their middle schools to research and see if it's something that we want to bring to Center Moriches Middle School. Thus far, I have presented to the middle school faculty, and I'm excited to say that actually that day, the first day that I presented it, 9 faculty members volunteered to be a part of that investigative team and research it with me and are excited to go on a site visit to other middle schools. In addition, we've discussed it at the curriculum committee, most recently as last night at our meeting and the meeting prior to that. And we have 6 parents in our current community of Santa Merches that I'm so thankful to them that have also volunteered to research this with me. So that team of 15 individuals, 9 teachers and 6 community members, this spring, we will be setting up a visit. I've spoken to other middle school principals who have graciously offered to have us visit their middle schools, to set up a visit to see if that's something that we'd like to move forward with.
So what are some of the schools that have this program?
So 2 that I'm honing in on right now because they're of similar size to us are Long Beach Middle School and Rockville Center Middle School. Those are the ones that I recommend that we set up visits with. They are both in the, well, one's in the authorization phase, which I'm going to get to, and one is actually just most recently
One's in candidacy and one's in authorization, so one's slightly more forward. But they're all within 3 to 4 years of going to the training and then implementing into their schools. Now, I'm not going to read this entire slide and go through the whole piece, but one piece that I want to point out is the very last line, all grades, all subjects, all students, all abilities inclusive. That's what stands out to me about the MYP program is that it's for all students, all grades, and everybody, it's the entire middle school. It's not something that's for a select group. It's a framework of teaching that includes, you know, every classroom you walk into is affected. Okay, the next slide. Now, the International Baccalaureate Learner Profile. There's something called the Learner Profile, and the items here on the left is what an MYP school strives to see in their students. So, you know, what do we want our students to be? We want them to be knowledgeable, risk-takers, caring, open-minded, reflective. And that is the basis of the training, and what's behind it is that is, having our learners strive to have these characteristics. And during my faculty presentation, I went through the whole presentation, and they asked questions, and we spoke about it, and talked about examples, and when, and how. And one of the teachers, when I said, so, if you're interested in volunteering, you I don't want to put you on the spot, you don't have to ask right now, you can shoot me an email. One of the people who I consider to be a master teacher at the middle school raised his hand and said, Ms. Bates, can you go back to that slide with the characteristics? So I did, and he said, I volunteered to help investigate this and to do your visits, and this is the slide why I volunteer. And I said, really? Why? What about this slide was the reason that you wanted to? And he said, this is why I became a teacher. And that kind of stood out to me because, at the end of the day, that is why most people, I think, go into teaching and are in the field of education to promote these attributes in our students. And it doesn't say, he said it doesn't say, have the highest GPA is not the goal or, what you normally hear. And so that kind of stood out to me and said, wow, that's true. That is why we went into education. So, what is that? Yes. Okay. Something else that is unique about the middle years program is that nobody, and when I say nobody, I mean no class, teacher, or program is seen as above or below another. These are the 8 subject groups that middle years program offers professional development in. And every teacher and subject at our middle school would fall into one of these groups. So, for example, language acquisition, that would be our low teacher, Spanish and French. Individuals and societies would be our social studies teachers. Design, that would be our technology teacher. Some of them are self-explanatory. Language and literature, those are ELA and English teachers. So for me, as a principal, when I'm looking at professional development opportunities and sending them to my staff, you most often see opportunities in ELA and math. That's where the heavy PD is, and which is wonderful and great. My love teacher was, I thought she was going to reach over the desk and give me a hug the other day when I showed her a professional development opportunity that she was excited about, because very rarely do you see one for a love teacher. And here, MYP program holds all teachers as equal in the professional development process and the influence that they can have on a child's education at the middle school. So professional development opportunities, they're rarely seen in art or physical education, and to be able to say that we're all equal parts. So I think that's what's unique about the circular model, in that it's not shaped like a pyramid where one is seen as above, but rather they all have an equal slice to the pie. And that's what I like about the circular formation, is that everybody is of equal importance. So what happens is teachers go to a professional development in each one of the 8 categories, all centered around the middle years program and framework of teaching.
What does the international mindedness at the bottom mean? How does that get wrapped into the curriculum?
So one of the pieces, what's unique about MYP is that it's not just a national program, but an international program. So I encourage everybody to go on the website, it's ibo.org, where you can learn and read more, but one of their I'd say unique factors is teaching students to be to have a global perspective and not so much centered around just our middle school, Center Mariches, and what we are, but what's going on in neighboring districts, neighboring states, neighboring countries, and in the world. To be prepared to work in a global economy. So one of their pieces is connecting with students internationally that have MRP schools. So that's kind of on the outside. And then the next ring you see is the subject groups in which they get trained in. And then the circular bright area says action, service, community project, or personal project. Another piece, which actually we spoke about at the curriculum committee yesterday, about an initiative that we're looking at for 10th period, infusing a community service component as part of our 10th period day, is the community service piece. Now, at the high school, we have CSIP as a graduation requirement for engage in community service. And at the middle school, what MYP does so nicely is that community projects are embedded into their framework, and they're saying, you know, that this is as important as your education, and why? Because you're helping those, you know, around you are becoming caring citizens. And then as you get, you hone in, is the IB learner profile, which is what I showed you on the other page. So as you zone in to the student, it's caring, inquirers. Now, this slide shows the timeline over 5 years. So what's the five-year vision? Should this be, and I just want to preface that by saying, should this be something that the team believes that we should also move forward with? And I was clear with the faculty when I said that, you know, when we go investigate, if this is not something that you see best fit for our middle school and something that we all believe in and want to move forward with, then we're not going to. And I meant that in that, you know, I'm leading the train and it's moving forward and I don't have everybody behind me, it's not going to be successful, and I know that. So should we move forward with MYP? Right now we're on the far left, which is the consideration phase, and that's present time to fall of year one, which would be next year. And I just put curriculum committee and middle school faculty because that's kind of who's in that phase with me. And in that box there, it says that you would investigate the IB program, complete the school information form, which I have done already for the middle school, and express interest to request additional information, which we've done. So we are now at the point where we are ready to set up some visits. And what I told the teachers, too, you know, one teacher said to me during the presentation, a special education teacher, well, you know, how does MIP work with special education? And I said, that's an awesome question. I've read that it's for all students and all abilities, but what I would like to do when we go to visit is meet with a special education teacher. They're the ones in the trenches doing the work with the students, and ask them, how does this benefit your students? What differences do you see in your teaching or your classroom or in the conversation amongst the students or in the culture of your building? And I told the staff that's who I'm most excited to speak with about MYP. You know, speaking with the principal on the phone is great, which I've done, but when I go to the schools, I'm looking to speak with the teachers to see how it's really changed them and their learning and their teaching. Next would be request for candidacy, if that's something that we want to move forward. And don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but just to give the board an overview of what it looks like. You're in a candidate phase, then you request authorization, and then you move to IB decision and review in the fourth and fifth year.
So, as you said, you're going to go and visit. I think you said you're going to visit somebody in the request for authorization phase and the request for candidacy phase. Mm-hmm. I'd urge you to also visit someone, a district that is to the right, that has implemented, that, you know, has been doing this for 5 and 6 years, so that you can get the feedback as to what the differences in those students are that have come out from
on
better
the other
teachers.
End.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would definitely add one more district to that mix.
Okay. And just on the bottom board, I just noted that MYP, this initiative, should this be something that we want to move forward with, this professional development, it can be currently funded through our current professional development budget. So in other words, the professional development money that we already have allocated for the district for our teachers, we do have a few codes and areas, and Ms. Perkins and I sat down and went over all of those. That MYP, the cost of MYP, there's a fee each year, a small fee, and everything would be funded through our current professional development budget. So we'd still go on some other professional developments, but a majority of it would be allocated towards middle years if that's something that we wanted to move forward with. Okay, moving from MYP, another way that we can enhance our current programs at the middle school is through the continuation of our elimination plan from study halls. So removing students from study halls and putting them into meaningful electives is definitely a way to enhance our program. So I know the board has heard me speak about this before, but just wanted to give you a brief overview. Currently, we're in year 2 of the plan. So last year was year 1.
All three grades had study halls when I came in. And last year, we implemented keyboarding every other day for sixth grade students that do not need to receive academic intervention services. And I just put a note there on the bottom column. You'll see the result of that is the elimination of study halls in sixth grade. And that happened last year, 13-14. The year prior, 77 sixth graders had a study hall, and last year, zero had a study hall. Year two is the current school year. We kept keyboarding. That's still going on. Seventh grade, we added exploratory language. It's a quarterly class, and what I call the students' wheel, where the students study 5 weeks of Spanish and 5 weeks of French to make an informed decision moving into eighth grade, where they get to choose which language they want to take. And I'm hearing great reviews about that class. The students love it. And I think it will give them a basis for their decision rather than just myself and the local teacher and Mr. Pepe going into the class and saying, well, we have Spanish, and this is a little bit about Spanish, and this is French, and what do you want to take? Now they actually have 5 weeks of education to go by to see what they have they're passionate. Additionally, in eighth grade, we added an additional section of earth science this year. By doing so, the students that take earth science also have a lab class associated with that earth science class, thus taking them out of a study hall. So the eighth grade really has the least number of study halls in middle school because if a child takes earth science, they do have the lab, and if they need academic intervention services, they're in AAS. So it's a small pocket in the middle that we'll be addressing in year four. So, board, as you know, we added an extra section of earth science and algebra this year, which helped eliminate study halls. And the result of that was the elimination of study halls in grade six and most of seven as of now. 123 had a study hall last year, and zero have the quarterly study hall this year. So next year, the plan is the complete elimination, if you look at the result, for six and seven, and in year four would be the elimination for all three grades. So next year, the plan is to continue keyboarding, exploratory language, and to add a STEM elective for seventh grade on an every other day if students don't need academic intervention services. Right now, the STEM elective that I'm looking into is a project-based learning class where students would be given a real-world problem and engage in a hands-on activity to solve that problem.
So does that mean that two sections in 15-16 eliminate, at that point, A, two sections eliminate all study halls? That's exactly what that means.
Next year?
Yes.
It runs on an every other day, so it runs opposite phys ed. So it's a point, it's a half year, so it would run correct. So no.
I'm just trying to coordinate because in this year it's quarterly class, mm-hmm. then
two. Oh, okay. So the way it was, seventh grade actually had the most study halls in the middle school. So the way it was scheduled is that every single seventh grader, no matter what, had a study hall for a quarter. In there, they had art, music, family consumer science, and study hall. So first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, in any order. Some, you know, they were all mixed up. And then, in addition to that, they had a study hall opposite their phys ed period, so A day, B day, if they do not need AIS. So really, some students, during one quarter of the school year, could have two study halls in a day. You know, if they have phys ed on an A day, on the B day, they could be in study hall, and it could be their quarter. So that's rough for a middle school. So what I felt was the most important to tackle this year was the quarterly, because that's every single student every day for a quarter. So that's what we did first.
So then you're down to one.
We're down to one every other day for a group, and then that's where the STEM elective would come in. So everybody would still continue with exploratory language in the quarter,
right.
And then those that don't have AIS would get that STEM every other day.
One section for all of seventh grade. That
correct.
That's the addition is STEM elective one section.
Yeah, it's actually more than one. It's one period, but two sections because it runs every other day.
Yeah.
So it's two different groups of students, but one section as far as a teaching section. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I just wanted to point out, similarly to Mr. Caswell, the clubs at the middle school, our current clubs are on the left. 15-16, I'm looking at two clubs. We'll be adding the Higher Challenges Club, which you might remember we presented on during the curriculum committee presentation, where the idea behind that is to have a monthly challenge for students, and recognizing those students is what I envision the events are doing. Having those students recognized possibly at a moving up ceremony for their participation in that challenge, and it'd be something that they would meet with the advisor about after school, complete at home, and some type of enrichment activity based on our curriculum. So that would be also the quiz bowl night that we spoke about at the curriculum committee would be something else that I see fit under that higher challenges advisor, which we will be running this spring at the middle school. But moving forward next year, I think that fits under the higher challenges club advisor position.
So that also something that quiz night was at the Clayton 2?
Yes. Clayton Huey will also be running that quiz bowl night this year in spring.
Correct.
And the second club would be American Sign Language Club. On the right side are also considerations for the future, debate club, history club, and book club. Now I'd like to introduce Mr. Harper. Welcome.
So I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that we have done very recently to enhance student performance. Many of these things actually have come out as a product of the collaboration with the curriculum committee. I think that there's been a lot of great ideas discussed. So one of the first things that we have recently added just this semester are the literature circles at the intermediate level. I put 8:20 a.m. just to note that it is not part of the school day, so a parent or guardian is responsible for getting the child there. Or if the child goes to camp, then it's easy to participate. But if a child does rely on busing, then that becomes problematic. So I thought that that was important to note because we're doing some fun things in 2015-16 to fix that. Also, we have added literature circles in grade 2, and that is during the school day. So while the reading teachers provide support, there's also a piece there where the reading teachers are providing this really great enrichment for students who meet that very specific criteria. You saw the Lego League. I think that tonight's presentation speaks for itself. But what we are looking to do this year is we grew the program. So in the past, we had fourth and fifth grade students participate. And the problem with a program where it's so intensive and you're really working hands-on with technology, we want to offer multiple clubs so that more students can have access to it. Also, we have structured intervention programs. 3 through 5, we brought in System 44 and Read 180. In the future, I'd love to come and give a more detailed presentation on that. But the great thing about that is once we purchased it, we own it forever. And it has really provided a really great structure for our intervention, and the data has come back really positive on the results that we're seeing from that. We have been very creative. We have the most amazing community, learning community, and the parents are a very important part of that learning community. And we've just been really smart to engage in conversations about having parents come in as volunteers. So we actually developed a very powerful program where parents and community members come in and they're working with our kindergartners, and we call that the Parents as Partners program. We also have the MYO enrichment program, which started last year. I know we have the coordinator, Kathy Rasso, in the audience today. And correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy, we went from 75 to 150 participants. Is that correct? So it has doubled from the fall to the spring, which could not be more exciting. And I know that if we added another day, we would have even gotten more participation, because sometimes we even have to turn kids away from what they want to take because we do keep them limited in numbers, so it really is a great hands-on learning opportunity. We have flexible math in grades 4 and 5. That has proven to be very powerful, and I think that that's something that we're really excited to continue to do. Book in a day. Thanks to the generosity of the CMPTA, we brought the Book in a Day program in last year. This year it's going to be in grade 5 again and grade 7, And one of the really unexpected parts of our Book of the Day is it's now being provided by a Newbery Medal winner, because Kwame Alexander, who we have worked so closely with over the last few years, was given that honor last month. And that is pretty incredible. It is the Academy Award for Young Adult Literature. So it is an amazing, amazing award, and what an honor. And so excited for us, because our kids are quite chummy with that Newbery Medal winner. So that's exciting. Also, we're working very diligently at developing a culture of readers. You'll notice that we have many literacy events constantly going on. We've implemented a summer reading program that really is not optional. It's an expectation that students are reading. We talk about it all the time. The teachers are always sharing what they're reading. When you walk into the classrooms, there's always great classroom libraries, and we want to make sure that we continue to grow that over the next few years. And instructional technology, it's hard to remember. 5 years ago, when we started together, there wasn't a smart board in almost any of the classrooms. I think two teachers were sort of piloting the smart board. And now, as you know, every single instructional space has a smart board. And now with the Smart School Initiative, we're even going to take our technology to the next level. So that is really exciting news. So for next year, what we're looking to do with our 13 clubs is one of the things that we want to do is add to those clubs and also modify some of the clubs. So for example, we have the chess club, and that's awesome. The kids love going in and playing chess. But we know that we could also expand that to brain games. So any game that really gets a kid thinking and using those critical thinking skills, we know that we can grow that club. We have the technology club. We can grow that to the coding club. So even just, you know, the recent ways that we're seeing these transformations in technology and what we do, you know, it's amazing that the children in the elementary level will probably hold jobs that don't even exist yet. We know that to be true. And even though I can stand before you and I go, coding is so important for our kids' future, if you said, hey, Hardwick, what does coding mean? I don't know. You need to talk to Michelle Kennedy or Dorn DePiri, but I know it's really important. That's just not even yet in what we know. You know, we're not the natives. When we hand a four-year-old a phone, it's amazing what they know to do with it so intuitively. And for us, even the manual isn't necessarily happening. So we want to make sure that our clubs are also changing to meet the demands of what the kids are thirsty for. We also want to look into a debate club. There is, just as the Lego League is a very organized program. So that we have to apply, and you know, there's a whole, the first Lego League is a very organized program. So similar with the debate club. So we're actually going to be researching what that entails, and we would love to bring in the debate club. Another very exciting thing for next year is that we're going to look at the programs that we have and the faculty and staff that we have, and similar to what we were able to do with reading, we want to provide more enrichment opportunities during the school day. We love our NYO enrichment classes. We love what we're able to do before and after school, but we want to make sure that we're providing these wonderful academic enrichment opportunities to the student who can't come before school and can't stay after school. So we are working collaboratively with the faculty and staff to make sure, and we can do this within the confines of the budget, we know that we can provide those opportunities next year, and we're looking at K-5 coding and some Lego opportunities working with STEMs within the primary levels, because I think that that's where we can really spark some students' interest in the STEM programs. And we also want to start looking into the FLES program, which is foreign language at elementary schools. So we are going to be investigating those opportunities next year as well. I actually had the good fortune, my first year here, working with Linda Adams. She actually took me, I don't know if you remember this, Mr. Stewart, she actually took me to Connecticut, and we investigated the kind of like an elementary IB program. And unfortunately, it's absolutely necessary. It requires a plus teacher. And that was the year that we had to, unfortunately, excess 9 teachers. So the possibility of bringing in wasn't even a conversation that we can engage in. And so it's really exciting to hear Melissa Bates and Ed Castle talk about what they're talking about, because it truly is an incredible program. And so it's time for us to look back into BLESS. So we're really looking forward to that. And as you can see in the future, just making sure that we are on top of what are those what are those enrichment opportunities that we could provide, so that when they get to these great opportunities at the middle school and at the high school, I want our kids to be really ready for the rigors at the secondary campus, so that the college and career opportunities that await them are endless. Thank you. And next, Mr. Soto.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Kind of along with what Mrs. Bates kind of spoke to in terms of professional development, my presentation kind of sticks to that sort of idea as well. One of the things with my particular department, which is special education, is most of, if not all of the programs and related services that are kind of attached to personnel are mandated based on stipulated language that is within a child's IEP. So what we look at, when we look at sort of enriching student performance and enhancing that process for our students, is how can we develop a professional development plan that kind of speaks to the needs of our students. So about 3 years ago, when I began as the director of pupil services, one of the things I looked at is the professional development plan for the district in terms of special education. And speaking to parents, speaking to my teachers, speaking to staff, one of the things we put together was that professional development plan. One of the things we really looked at is focusing on literacy development. The first year that I had the position, we introduced to my staff a program that's called Visualizing and Verbalizing. It's a program that was developed by a research individual by the name of Linda Mouvel. It's a program that looks at the process of visualizing what we read. We, I think everyone in the room kind of takes this process for granted, because we read a text, we read a novel, we read something in the newspaper, and we automatically visualize what we read. Students that have a learning disability, especially within a particular disability type, may have find this as a very difficult process. Just to read something and use the language that's used within that text to help you to visualize it actually helps your reading comprehension skills. So one of the things that we did, we brought the visualizing and verbalizing program to district. We trained every teacher, every TA. We also trained all my related service providers as well. I also participated in the training, and I had my school psychologist participate in the training as well. I'm of the opinion that if everyone is trained, we all kind of speak the same language, and we can sort of push the instructional initiatives further by knowing the components of a particular program that we're trying to push forward. This year, actually, we introduced the Auden-Gilliam approach to reading as well. There are 5 components of reading when you look at reading acquisition. One component is something called phonemic awareness. It's how a language is kind of put together. So one of the things, once again, we heard the outcries of parents, the outcries of my staff. We engaged in a very intensive staff development. It was a 2 full days of professional development on looking at the Auden-Gilliam approach, which is actually sort of like considered the grandfather of a lot of the reading programs that kind of exist now, such as the Wilson program, which is another sort of phonemic awareness program that kind of builds a child's ability to decode words. The coding is just sort of looking at every small component of a word and putting them together and being able to kind of read that word. Our students, unfortunately, due to their disabilities, sometimes they have a difficult time with this. So we were hearing for years now that our teachers needed this particular staff development. What was interesting with this staff development is that we were able to I was able to sort of hear the interest of other districts around around us that were able to sort of send their teachers to sort of defray some of the cost of this professional development. So we were able to do that this year. I'm also working with a consulting group called Consulting That Makes a Difference. One of the things that we try to do in special education is we try to give every student the opportunity to mainstream into less restrictive environments, whether they're mainstreaming for academic reasons or whether they're mainstreaming for social reasons. Now, to do that, there's a very sort of systematic way of doing it. I think that my teachers, my staff, we all collectively do a great job at it, but there's always room for growth. So we're working with a consulting group that is coming into district now that is giving us further insight in terms of finding clever ways to infuse that mainstreaming opportunities within our student body. The last thing that we did this year, which I'm very, very proud of because I've been trying to get this done for I think 3 years now, and I finally got it done, but we actually put in a transition coordinator at the secondary complex. One of the things that is necessary with a child's sort of development after the age of 15 is that within a child's IEP, we actually have to put in language within that IEP that talks about what is the child going to do post-secondary. So for years, we've been doing it through predominantly through teachers, through my school psychologist at the secondary complex, but this year we were able, through the Board of Education's gracious support, to put in an individual at the secondary complex that acts as the transition coordinator. His name is Mr. Gordon. I think he's doing an amazing job this year, and I have great hopes that he's going to continue in the future to kind of take our transition planning program to definitely the next level. Now, some of the things that we're hoping to do for next year is continuing with the professional development focus, but changing the sort of focus a little bit, shifting it to something that is described as more of a diagnostic and sort of descriptive remedial sort of like program, in the sense that I think that as a staff, we do an amazing job sort of diagnosing it. Let me just kind of explain that. Sort of evaluating a student and making a determination as to what deficits, what are they struggling with. But in the future, what we hope to do is kind of change that in a sense and looking at it and make it a little more systematic by looking at the deficits and now designing sort of an individual plan of remediation to kind of address whatever deficits that are found. So that's something that we sort of started this year. One of the things that we infused into the Auden-Gillian multisensory approach workshops that we did this year is that I made the presenters, the professional development presenters who I work very closely with from the Da Vinci Group, one of the charges that I had for them is to infuse this diagnostic process to ensure that my teachers were able, and myself, this is another training that I also participated in, but to sort of engage in that process to ensure that my teachers knew exactly the right process to follow when diagnosing whatever deficits that are found in students and prescribing a remedial action. The next thing that we're hoping to do is sort of individualize the professional development opportunities for teachers by program. One of the things that we have to be aware of, so especially in special education, is that we run programs. We have self-contained programs. We have direct consulting teacher programs. We have resource room programs. And depending on the needs of the students, the PD, the professional development that are offered to teachers, should look differently. Because the needs of the students that you're working with are very different. So we are now sort of in the process of individualizing professional development opportunities for groups of teachers that teach within separate programs. Third thing that we're looking at is looking at, it's sort of in the same vein, our resource room program, ensuring that at the secondary complex, ensuring that they have the right resources, sort of the right methodology in terms of providing those supports that are needed for our students. Now, this is sort of a program enhancement that we are working at. I'm working very closely with Gordy and the transitional team at the Second Day Complex. And this is something that is sort of like a vision of mine. And when I wanted to sort of get the transitional coordinator's position, I had this in mind, which is a development of a transitional workshop series for students. One of the things that we're looking at is some of our students, and not just in the special education realm, but in the general education population too, that are leaving our system not as, you know, prepared in some areas as they should. So we're looking at developing a workshop series that now looks at what students need post-secondary in terms of what do they need to be ready for college, for career. We're taking a very close look at the CDOT standards, which is the Career Development Occupational Studies standards, to see what students really need when they exit high school. We are in the process, like I said, of developing a workshop series that will transpire after school, so students will come and either, you know, sit in a classroom with Mr. Gordon or other individuals that we can engage in this process and sort of learn sort of that transitional piece to help them be better prepared for not only life after school, but life while they're in school as well. So that's something that we hope to begin in September. We're actually like planning it now. So over the next 5 months, I think we should have a kind of good layout of what that would look like. Now, in terms of 2016 to 2019, some of the instruction initiatives that I hope that we would engage in is, this is another vision that I have as well, in terms of developing an instructional lab at the elementary level. We have a special ed conference room at the elementary level. At the elementary school. One of the things I envision sort of seeing is converting that space into an instructional lab, where now students or teachers can utilize that space to address whatever deficits that students have. So we would have resources, we would have programs to kind of look at what students need and kind of group them accordingly based on the diagnostic prescriptive piece that I described before. The second piece would be providing the professional development to give teachers the guidance that they need to kind of utilize that space appropriately. And the third is incorporate community partnership and transitional workshop series at the high school. One of the things I kind of see happening as well is reaching out to community members, individuals that may have businesses, individuals that are that have different experiences and different occupations, and have them come in and do a workshop series for us, even as guest speakers, to give students an opportunity to not only connect with the community, but see from sort of a first-hand point of view what that occupation entails. The last thing that we would like to look at is something that I actually did many, many years ago when I first started teaching. I'm not going to date myself, so I'm not going to tell you how many years ago it was, but it was some time ago. We actually introduced a parent outreach workshop series where we actually had parents that we had identified based on certain criteria. So if a student had poor attendance, if a student had poor grades, if there was a lack of communication between the teachers, the school, and the parents, we would send out some invitation. We would actually even go to the homes at times and invite them to come in and engage in this sort of workshop series. We did everything from, and I actually ran that workshop series. It was by far one of the greatest education experiences that I ever had in my career. I was able to give back to the community and give back to certain parents and give them the necessary tools that they need to kind of engage in that educational process with their kids, which is something that, especially in the field of special education, and it's not necessarily just special education, any student that, as a district, we would define as at risk. We invite parents in, we engage in this workshop series, and we give parents the necessary tools that they need to assist their students at home. Okay? All right, at this time, I'm going to introduce Mr. Thode, who's standing right behind me. Thank you.
So, we have a very simple slide, and this just happens to be our athletic program. Before I get into that, I'm actually going to kind of refer to that at the very end. What the board should know and does know is that our athletic program are all non-mandates. Okay? We are not mandated to have an athletic program. We're not mandated to have any of these teams. And when I thought about putting together this presentation, something came to my mind. And specifically, a lot of times in my realm, you'll hear in any community, and I've heard it in this community, well, Center Ridge is all they care about is their sports. All they care about is their music. You know, or they care about, you know, that type of thing. And what I need to kind of get across is athletics, interscholastic athletics, the music program, the elective program, the clubs, okay, they're supposed to be an extension of the classroom. Okay, that is ultimately what a successful program will be. So I just want you to keep that in mind. What we do want is we want our kids to care passionately about their opportunities and their choices that we give them in athletics, in the elected program, in the clubs. We want our teachers, our advisors, our staff, we want them to invest in our students, in their choices, in their opportunities. But as a district, and I can say this with certainty, especially with all the administration and the Board of Education, okay, what we want them, the student, what we passionately care about is wanting them to create an identity and a voice through the extension of the classroom, which is our athletic program, our electives, our clubs, and so forth and so on. So what many of you may or may not know is just athletics alone on any given year, 55 to 65% of our 7th through 12th graders are involved in at least one sport. Okay. Ultimately, our goal as a district, as an educational system, is that we should get 100% of our kids, K to 12, involved in something that's an extension of the classroom, whether that's the clubs, whether that's the sports, and so forth and so on. So that's what we want to do. Obviously, for obvious reasons, when you have kids involved, you have direct contact with them. Okay, you have the ability to dangle a carrot. It is usually something they like, they enjoy, they love. So you have that carrot to help them academically, to push them along academically, because they're invested in something that they love. And then obviously we make connections. The interesting part about this, and just referring to the principals and Ms. DeSoto, many times, and I'll just, again, use athletics as an example, but I can tell you this also in the music program or whatever else, they will come from a CSE, that a student CSE, we need them to belong to something. We need a team. We need them to get on the team. Or we have a seventh grader that's having some transition issues, you know, socially. So can you get them in this? And that is ultimately what we want to do. When you see all these programs, and you'll see quite a few middle school programs with athletics especially, ultimately what my vision is for this district is the middle school and the junior varsity programs, along with our clubs and our elective programs, we want to get as many kids involved as possible. We want to keep pushing to that 100%, 100%, 100%. The varsity is a little different as far as athletics is concerned, because those are the kids that are excelling. They want to maybe go on to college, get scholarship, and so forth and so on. But those are our goals. Now, I just want to go back, because I think it's very important. When you look at NYP, the IB Learner Strive to Be, that is naturally embedded. Those qualities are naturally embedded in the programs of athletic, music, arts, the clubs. These things are what drives those programs. So it's funny because I have had experience at NYP, and it was something that is very clear. Because of the areas that I oversee, I've seen this for years and years and years before NYP even existed, really, or before it became, very popular, I should say. And that's really important to understand. An extension of the classroom. That is what our goal has to be in all of our non-mandated areas, an extension of the classroom, making those connections. So what I would tell you as we go back, is not to just view this as sports or music or whatever else. We have to view it as an opportunity for kids to get an identity, for kids to become thinkers, to be resilient, and on and on and on all those types of qualities. I'll leave you last with this slide, and then I'll one other comment, and then I'll just kind of refer to the slide so you understand. You have to think of these extension of the classroom opportunities and choices as the heartbeat of our children, pumping the blood to their academic minds. And that's really what you should really start to focus in on. And, you know, outside sports, outside opportunities where kids pay to excel and whatever else, that is a different animal. Interscholastic, clubs, music, art, and so forth and so on, that is the heartbeat of our students, because that's what they're passionate about, and that will help them learn if we involve those NYP characteristics. So for the board's purposes, you'll see what we offer. I can tell you this in our current budget, with some creativity, we are looking to just add middle school, again, more opportunity to bump up that 55 to 65% of our kids involved in something else. And at the high school, the varsity winter track. That is another area where our kids, less opportunities. By having this, we can get 50 or 60 more kids involved. And you should know that most of our athletic teams are scholar athlete teams. There's a lot of data out there that says if you're involved, you're going to do better academically. They're on a schedule. They have the routine. They have to get things done in a systematic way. We have an opportunity to dangle that carrot. And we have, you know, we have an academic eligibility policy. So when the principals say, yeah, these students have two failures or whatever else, we start working on the extra help. We will start working on monitoring every 2 weeks and so forth and so on. So again, the extension of the classroom is really what I want to leave you with.
Now, boy, just so you know, there's one more slide. I thought it was important to put a slide out there that had a cost factor to it. You know, I'm waiting for Governor Cuomo, like we all are, literally praying that more money comes our way. So I want the board to be prepared in case that happens, or if the board wishes, as it ends towards the budget cycle at the end of March, looks to replace something that we already have with something that maybe the administration, if they had their druthers, they would implement immediately. So I'm just going to put one on slide. I would only ask you to touch upon it if it hits your area, and maybe about 30 seconds, because I know it's been a long night and the board has a large or a very executive session coming up next. So if you put the last slide, Mr. Thill, please. And then Clayton Huey, just...
Yep, very quickly. We used to have higher challenges. It was eliminated with the cuts that were made several years ago. This would be a very similar position. I would love to see a full-time enrichment teacher back at the elementary school. I'm done.
Quickly, middle school board, I just feel like I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't share that ultimately what I feel would be best for middle school, what most middle schools have, is a non-period day. That's what it's called, even though we have 10 periods in our school day, a non-period academic day. Right now we have an 8, so moving to a 9-period day would be a dream and a goal and a wish for us at the middle school and our faculty. And ultimately what Mr. Caswell spoke about was opportunities and choices, and supporting that, those opportunities and choices in the area of language acquisition. So it would mean 3 more FTEs, in addition some possible transportation costs that we'd have to speak to our bus company about. And what would that bring to the middle school? That would bring back the full year foreign language program in grade 7, and the exploratory program, language program, would be moved back to grade 6. In addition, 2 other points that I think would be fantastic for the middle school. In the future, possibly, our middle school orchestra, and Mr. Thode, I don't want to jump on your toes, but a middle school boys and girls cross country.
For the high school, it's really completing the journey for opportunity and choice in terms of scheduling. To go back to my original presentation, we have a gap. You know, when we went from 8-period day to a 9-period day, and we know why, you know, because of the budget. But if we have a magic wand, we would want to fill this gap in and offer students opportunities and choices for full schedules. Full opportunity. So I would definitely want a third language. What that entails, well, I've done ASL programs in other districts. I've never done Italian. I know that's very popular. I know some schools do service learning distance learning opportunities in Mandarin Chinese. I mean, I'm just threw those out as carrots, if you will, because I think our school would be greatly enriched if we had a third language. Science research. I would love the opportunity for our students to partner with Brookhaven Laboratories, Stony Ridge University, whatever the case may be, and have these students that are STEM-minded students have that opportunity to advance in that area of their passions. We have standalone IP courses that I would love to add that weren't that progression that I described earlier, whether it's statistics and math or European history. That's a completely different course than world history that we offer here. Mostly seniors would take that course. And of course, computer science. I mean, we have definitely increased our elective offerings in technology, thanks to the board. And that's something that would be an end game that I would definitely want to see. And elective courses for juniors and seniors. And I wanted to end my little spiel to touch upon what we really mean as principals and directors for opportunity and choice. Not just words. I mean, that's our passion, that's our calling. And
I got to tell you this quick story that just really happened a couple days ago. And I just, it was one of those moments where you're like, God, I can't believe that this is actually happening now when I knew this presentation was going to happen. I took my son Chris, who was 11th grade, to his dermatologist appointment in Stony Brook. And as often happens to me, especially in the North Shore where I taught in a little place, I'll get, hey, Mr. Caswell, remember me? And I didn't remember the receptionist. She was actually the billing agent. And I said, I need a name that I can make the association. She said, Lisa McNally. I got you. 98 or 99. She goes, I graduated in 99. Oh, okay, great. Yeah, you took psych and social. The end of my career, I was an elective teacher for seniors only. I had the best job on the planet. I taught a Vietnam course. I taught a foreign policy course. I taught psychology. I taught sociology. I had the best schedule in school. In fact, kids, I want to take great courses in the last year, if not semester, of their high school career. And they're going off, and you know, maybe they're going to continue these courses that I taught them. So Lisa McNally, and I'm not making this up for this presentation, she really said this. You know, we're talking. I'm like, hey, you know, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I just got my hospital administration degree, and I'm going to move forward with that. I love working with people. And without hesitation, she goes, hey, Ms. Caswell, I don't want to embarrass you, but I love your sociology class. I love learning about people. And she goes, and she thanked me. I was like, and I haven't seen her since graduation day in 1999. And I said, wow, that's the power of a full range of opportunities and choices in terms of the schedule. Whether it's AP, concurrent, just a straight, cool course. Call it elective, call it what you will. You get kids in their seats in a class, and you empower them with the knowledge and the passion of the instructor, it's a home run. And that's what we all mean tonight when we're offering opportunity and choices. And again, we've been working with this, at least I've been working with this board for a long time, and they get, you know, it's rough. I wouldn't want to be in a position making decisions, especially with the budget. But, you know, these are things that I'm glad we're at least continuing to present and scratch and claw our way to these aspirations.
Thank you.
Just to add, you'll see the varsity, obviously, middle school, cross country, again, getting more middle school, especially as they go into 7th grade and 8th grade, when they're going through changes, you know, getting them involved and connected and, you know, dangling that carrot. The high school level, again, wish list. Only the reason you'll see those in particular is because the winter season, again, is another opportunity where we can get kids involved, and we don't have the facility, so bowling obviously has to happen at a bowling alley. So it's a facilities issue as well as a strategic thing. And badminton is an indoor sport in the spring, and that's one of the seasons where we don't have anything inside, everything's outside. So that would be another opportunity for those kids that may not be the traditional sport athletes, you know, just going towards the traditional sports that are, you know, the more popular, quote unquote. So.
And lastly, we spoke predominantly tonight of academic opportunities as something that we're looking at as well in terms of district-wide clinicians. There's an emotional social component of education that we can't necessarily ignore. 2 years ago, we had to reduce our clinician staff by one. We currently have 3 clinicians in the district. We have 1 at the elementary, 1 at the secondary complex, and we have a social worker who's district-wide K-12. 2 years ago, we dissolved our 612 program, who predominantly we hired a school psychologist to kind of help us manage that program and also do some other activities for us as well, such as counseling and evaluations. We're looking to include a clinician or to add a clinician back to the system, whether it's a school psychologist, a social worker. Right now, just for the board's thinking, right now, we every year, as a result of not hiring someone 2 years ago, we actually employ the services of a per diem school psychologist to come in and conduct evaluation tests. We do it every single year. It is a cost to the district. We believe that cost can be given to this particular salary. It will defray some of the cost, not all of it, but will definitely defray some of it. We're even looking at the possibility of adding a 0.6, which is a part-time individual, possibly a 0.8, whatever the board will, consider. Now, the second piece is the additional security measures. I think no one in this room would argue the fact that security is something that we can't necessarily ignore. So we're looking at researching the possibilities with the Emergency Preparedness Committee, looking at what we truly need in the district
to just enhance our security across the district, whether it's cameras, whether it's a scan, an ID scan system at each building, whether it's additional security staff. It is something that we're researching and that we're going to take to committee to see what proposal recommendations will come back to the Board of Education. The last piece is looking at everything that we're proposing tonight. Obviously, there is a fund, you know, attached to it. There is allocations that should be attached to it. One of the things that we have a professional development fund that is allocated across the district. So it's sort of like one pot and everyone sort of dips into it based on the professional development needs that we all have. Now, you can see with all of the initiatives that the building principals, myself, the other director is looking to push forward to improve student performance, that comes, unfortunately, at a price. So we're looking at possibly proposing to the Board of Education a moderate increase in that particular code, possibly even by 20% the first year, maybe 10 each additional year, so that we can have the funds necessary to provide our staff with the necessary professional development needs that they have. Okay, at that time, this is our presentation. We'll take any questions or...
Yep. Questions from the
let's go back.
Yep.
Thank you, everyone. Great presentation.
Yeah, I thought the presentation was phenomenal.
Thank you.
Before we go to the next session, if anybody from the community has a specific question on the presentations, we'll spend 5 minutes. Any questions? Great. Okay, so that brings us to the next section of the agenda tonight, which is questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda only. Yes. Can you just come up? I'm sorry, just like, because we're recording this, so we can hear you. Thank you.
I'm Miriam Gillis, and I'm concerned last month at our meeting, Kristen gave her, Dr. Hines gave her informal resignation and said she would do a formal one tonight. And I didn't get a chance to look to the agenda till I got here, and I understood her family and all were coming, and I'm wanting to know what happened, because I don't even see it, and I know she gave a lot of her life blood for the board.
Yep. So she did provide a written resignation, as is, you know, in accordance with the rules, and she was going to speak tonight, and I would say just contact her and ask her that what you know what.
Well, I thought it should have been on here as a courtesy. I mean, you know, you guys. I know it's voluntary, and I know you know you put in a lot of time, and I know she worked very hard for many of us. And I just thought it would be nice to see her some sort of recognition for it. And I think a lot of the people that I know felt the same way.
Ms. Gill, she had planned to be here to speak tonight, and that was a absolutely supported, certainly by me and the rest of the board. And she,
I was going to be here. I really, truly.
I would urge you to just give her a call and ask her.
Well, I definitely felt that from her that she was going to be here with her family tonight. Yes, and that was as of last night.
I received a text from her beforehand that she was up to work, and then it was going to be too late for her family. That's
well,
the reason.
Like, you know, I think we should do some recognition as a community when someone works as hard.
Understood. And she was going to be here tonight and twice in two different meetings. I thanked her for her service, and it was great. And I feel that the loss of her on the board is a loss of a lot of knowledge.
Big, yes.
Yep. And I said that at the very beginning, and I feel that way. And she was going to be here tonight, but something personal came up for her. So I urge you to contact her.
I'll definitely check and I'll get back to you.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments on tonight's agenda? So Pat, can we combine, just given the time, before we get there, I wanted to say that I thought the presentations tonight, I thought the presentations tonight were really good. I thought that they were exciting. And it's kind of, and you know, I know that I've been kind of maybe driving you a little bit crazy and pushing and saying what I'm thinking about and looking for, but it's that vision, that here's what we can do, here's what we think we can do, we recognize the budget constraints, but here's how we can grow, is to me what is extremely exciting. So I know that a lot of work went into these, and you know, I had an opportunity to see some different drafts and some different thought processes, and the process that you've gone through is great. And I think that it's, and I've got some notes here that I'm going to give you to kind of build this out a little bit more. And the way that I look at this is, you know, and anybody else feel free to jump in, but almost like your roadmap for 5 years. As things come up and things change, you're going to build this out and add, you know, a year to the back end. And, you know, your wish list, you know, one of my comments was kind of, I call it the wish list, or what would I do if money wasn't an option, your last page. You know, I would say you build those in with the exact dollars so that in every decision that we make, we can say, you know, Kim was looking to do this, and this is the cost. So if we spend the money here, it's taking away from something we can do here. We can really see, you know, in real time how every decision and every dollar we spend impacts what you as the leaders of the buildings and the educational experts here tell us we should be doing. So, A, I appreciate the time, and B, I have to say I am excited by what I saw. I don't know if anybody else, before we get to the regular agenda, has anything to say. No? Okay. Great. Okay. So, in the interest of time, I'd like to, Pat, maybe we can go through 5. Does anybody have a problem if we go through 5 through 18? 5 through 18? And then we'll go.
No problem.
Okay.
That's it.
Do you want to ask for a motion?
Motion to adopt agenda items 5 through 18.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. 19.
Number's missing, so we only have up to 15. So 16 through 21 is not on our. We're not sure what we're
doing. Okay.
Number 15 was disposition of records, books, and/or equipment.
Yeah,
number 16 is salary moves. 17 is retiree contribution, 403Bs. And 18 is the use of employee benefit accrued liability reserve.
So 19 is donation, recommended action that upon the recommendation of superintendent of schools, Board of Education accepts the following donation. Donation of $900 from the Red Devil Pride Club for music services, and we'll adjust the music code accordingly. Motion.
Motion and thank you.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. As always, all donations are an enormous help. And I think then we can go, let me just take a look, 20. So 20 is, do you want to run through them? If you don't have them, we'll read through them.
Ms. Bates, yes.
No, I have them.
It's on there, right?
No. We have them.
The yellow copy, well, this copy there.
Okay, so then just give it to Ms. Dill, and Pat's going to read them anyway out loud.
Yeah, we'll read those out loud.
You can see what we'll mention.
Oh, it's not on.
Just so that you can read.
So you're going to read them out loud?
Okay, go ahead. 20, recommended action. That upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Santa Maria's Board of Education approves the Santa Maria's varsity softball team to attend spring training in Disney World, Orlando, Florida, from April 7th, 2015 through April 12th, 2015 at no cost to the district.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following individuals for the various 2014-2015 committees.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education conducts a first reading of the following policy.
Motion.
I'd like to discuss it for a second. And in reading it over, it's a good policy, I got to say that. But I think when we get to page 6 where it says, you know, when they reach the thresholds of number of absences throughout various classes, and when they reach the second threshold that the guidance counselor will contact, I think we really need to add something where there's actually a physical document signed by the parent or legal guardian, as well as the guidance counselor or building administrator, and dated, that goes in the file. This way there can never be a, you know, he said, she said, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And with that documentation, we've done our due diligence, and I think that document should be done at every threshold after the second and up.
So a record of the contact, is that what you're looking for?
Yes,
record?
Exactly. But not just a record of contact, but on that record of contact, the severity of the level of absence that they're at and the consequences if it continues from an educational standpoint, I apologize, what it means to the child insofar as they're learning, but also the consequences if they were to continue as far as being thrown out of school is what it amounts to, I guess, if you really want to get down to it.
Yeah, you don't throw them out of school.
Well, you don't throw them out, but if they reach that certain level, they're considered a dropout anyway.
Yes, that's true.
But I think we really need that physical document signed.
Right. What I would say to the Board of Education, and Ms. Long, I totally understand, and I know Mr. Caswell's back there, who's the attendance expert in the district, especially at the high school level, and probably could speak to the contact we make to families, whether it would be through Connect Ed or so on down the line. But what I would say is, can you give me, because it looks like you have probably one or two lines that you want to add. It's only the first reading. So I would say let's continue moving it forward, right? Give me the couple of lines. Mr. Caswell, if you don't mind, I'm going to have you look at the couple of lines, maybe report back to me, and then I can report back to the board even in the Friday update, you know, with some thoughts behind it. And then if we need be at the board, this is a board policy. So if the board wants to add a line in there, then that's the board's prerogative.
It may be helpful along those lines. Sorry, go on.
I would allow Mr. Caswell, if you want, I know it's been a long night, I can have him explain in detail the contact we do make, because it's pretty extensive right now.
No, and I read it. It's in here, and I read it, and it is extensive. But still, you got that. Because you don't have that document signed, you can still get the, you never called, you never did this. Once that document's in the folder, that can never be sent.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
So we'll see the line that will be sent to all the board members.
I'll try to work up some verbiage and I'll throw it out to you guys and see what you think about it.
I would do a touch base with Mr. Caswell.
Okay.
Send him a note.
It would be in our email.
Yeah. But send him a note. Yeah. And so that we're crystal clear on exactly the practice today and from what we do. So we're still going to have to accept the first reading. It's the first reading.
Totally
you can change
reading.
It. Yeah.
That's exactly why it's that way.
Yeah.
So
why we do
motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries. Brings us to the next session, which is general discussion, budget calendar.
Yeah, I just want to, as we've done, and I really appreciate the Board of Education's kind of vision and making sure that I have some direction. We're headed towards March 19th, I believe, is our next Board of Education meeting, I believe. And, you know, for that particular night, I have a vision because of already what we've done so far of where we should go with the budget. I'm calling it a budget calendar, but almost I'm looking at now a direction of a budget presentation. So if you are if you're so inclined tonight, just to kind of give me some direction, I believe what I'm looking at is revenue. I'm looking at buildings and grounds and maintenance. I'm looking at the tax cap levy, what the allowable amount is, and maybe with the board and money and percentages.
Yes.
Those are the three things I'm looking at to kind of get towards the finale. If I have the governor's revenue amount, wouldn't that be great? But that's what I'm thinking.
What's the date that we're expecting? I know
the date that
we're expecting for state revenue.
By April 1st is the date. You know, whether that's going to happen. Since I've been here, I think it has been, except for that one time there was some issue, and I know they held back.
In the last few years, it has been.
We've had it, and we've had it before.
We've always had it in January, the governor's proposal, but he's held back on it. This is the first year it's ever happened. And then you have the legislative. The budget is passed, and then
Carol, explain to the board, because I would think they definitely want to know this. If it's not passed, I know I have my crystal ball. You have your crystal ball, and just our experience and wisdom. But if it doesn't happen, and we're sitting there, and we have to adopt by April 15th. Am I correct with that? I have to come to the Board of Education and make a presentation by April 15th, which would really mean April 1st because we're on a break before that. But
April 22nd is that's the next board meeting.
But April 15th, by law, I have to come up and give a...
We need to do it by... The budget has to be adopted at the April 22nd board meeting. So the budget has to be in place before then.
Okay. But I could present, then, you're saying, on the 22nd, and at that night they could do it, but not the way we'd like to do it. We'd like to do it April 1st. Right. But just go through, because I think the board needs to be prepared right now, and the public should know. The swing could be somewhere in the range of $500,000, which really changes the game quite a bit. So I know what I think it's going to come in at. I know you have yours, and we're a little off probably our numbers, but I would like to say to the board, okay, if it doesn't happen, and they don't come to terms, and Cuomo does not, we do not get our numbers. I think I know, but can you just explain what's going to happen?
There's a couple of approaches that you could take. One is that you use a zero percentage. You don't increase your state aid at all. But the problem with that is if you build your budget on a 0% increase and the voters approve the budget, and then the state aid numbers come in after that, you can't increase your budget. So that wouldn't be an option. I wouldn't recommend that as an option. Another option is to kind of estimate your state aid, maybe take the middle of the road. You could do the maximum amount or kind of do a middle of the road approach for state aid and build your budget on that. If the state aid comes in at that number, great. If it comes in at a higher number, that's even better. If it comes in lower, then you could apply fund balance. And we do have enough in the unappropriated fund balance to absorb a couple $100,000. And those would be the approaches. So that's how you would build the budget.
If you did it at zero, just so that I understand, and let's just assume that the board's goal of a tax levy increase of 1.5, and then it came in higher, right?
The state aid came in higher.
State aid came in higher. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? So you say you can't adjust your budget, right? So what does that mean? How does that play out through the process?
Okay. If the state aid number came in higher, then when through the budget process, I mean, you're getting more aid, you have additional fund balance.
Right.
Right. And then you could use that for the following year.
Okay. And the same would hold true if you went with your estimate and it came in higher, and if you went with your estimate and it came in lower, it comes from your surplus. Got it.
Correct.
And, of course, now we're going to, that's why I'm saying the tax levy presentation, cap presentation,
a
limitation, I guess we should call it, that's important for you all to hear, because our tax cap, our tax limitation will probably be close in the range of 4%. So when you talk about going out of the 1.5 instead of a 4%, right, you're going to leave $500,000-$600,000 on the table.
So I think now that you said 4%, I think we should take a second and just explain what that means.
Yeah, I hope everybody here has seen the presentation with the tax cap year after year.
Right.
2% is not 2%.
Right, I was going to say. Right.
So when you hear 2%, there is a formula that comes into play, and Carol has to do that formula. And then she has to give it to the state. The state has to look at it and say, yes, for your school district, under the circumstances, and it's an extensive equation, which we've shown every year here, and we'll show again on the 19th, That's why I was recommending that you should see it again and how it worked out. It appears at this point in time that it's going to be actually over, I believe, over 4%, meaning that that's what are allowable with a 50% passing. Mm-hmm. When you put it up to a vote, because it's not piercing the cap, it would be at a 4%, you need a 50% plus one for it to end up passing. So in our circumstances right now, this is all coming to play at once. And we're talking, 1-5, I think a 1-3 after I heard with the veterans exempt last week with a couple board members. So we're kind of playing around with that. We have a bond we're talking about now. And now the CAF and that Cuomo. So it's kind of all coming, and hopefully it'll all come to play in the next couple of weeks. But I want everybody to be prepared, because as an administration now, you heard the charge, and I'm excited about it. I thought you did a great job as well, administration. But now, things could happen that the, some of the things might not be able to be put in place. And that's why we have to. And hopefully, like I said, I'm praying about it. I believe it's going to, everything's going to come through. I know Ms. Turkington last year, we sat there as well, and we ended up coming out with a 0%.
Zero. In the
end, and it was just unbelievable. So it
everybody
worked out.
Everybody noticed that on their tax bills? Yeah. 0% tax?
It was incredible. So sometimes the Lord, it just works that way, and it did. I hope it does this way. So.
Because of the tax assessment, we went out with a 1.18% tax increase that we asked you to vote on last year. And because of a higher assessment of homes in the area, it became a zero. And that's something that we don't know. Everybody wants this to be an exact science. Everyone wants this to us to, tell you exactly what is going to happen. And we can't. There are so many variables. So what went out is 1.18%. Ended up being a 0% because of increased valuation. So I know we hear a lot of complaints all the time, but I haven't heard any, hurrah, a zero. So I'm saying it. And then I also received my check in the mail because we were under the cap. So actually last year was a negative tax increase due to the check that was returned as well. So, I mean, that's great, and it puts us on a good path, and that hopefully you can keep it now. Governor Cuomo is playing. I went to a legislative breakfast in Longwood that I go to every year, and also the New York State School Board Association dinner last week in Riverhead. And both places, you realize we are all in this together, and we hear all of the different input from the different schools that are worried about this, and the games that Governor Cuomo is playing, connecting all kinds of aid to other things and trying to make, if you pass this one, then it has to pass this, and connecting everything. So, you think that it's going to get better, and then it's, two steps forward, one step forward, two steps back. So now we have to wait again for, and we have been lucky the last few years with budgets on time and with increased school aid, without any strings attached. But now he's attaching strings, and so it's become a lengthier process.
But you said the word hurrah, and I will tell you one thing, in my heart, it was a hurrah moment. 68% passed the budget last year. If you look at numbers over the last decade here in Santa Maria Ridges, that 68% was an extremely good number. So, yeah, you might not get the hurrah when the zeros came in, but I will tell you, to me, that was an amazing
thing. Thank you. So, good ground to build on, so hopefully we can...
Agree. Absolutely agree. So, the net-net is the next presentation will be revenue ex state, I suppose, if we don't have the state numbers, correct? If we have the state numbers... That's in there, and it's a line item that's included. So then you have building and grounds and maintenance. Those are the three presentations. That then, so revenue on the one side, building and grounds, maintenance, on the other side. We've then, I think, gone through every one of the categories, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then there'll also be the cap discussion to explain why 2 = 4. okay. So were you all in agreement on that? Is there anybody else wants to see that they haven't seen in a budget presentation?
The only thing I'd like to see is with the state aid, because we don't know. If you could present it with what you anticipate to be possibly the low and the high value, two separate
And how would you like it done with a, just curious, I will do it both ways, and it'll be my way and Carol's way, which is kind of funny. And what about, would you like to see any way, I don't know.
Carol's conservative.
I see, definitely is. Yeah, that's your way. Would you like to see anything from a 1.5 to a 4% as well?
Yeah, you know what, show it to us.
Okay. Thank you.
What does that mean, 1.5 to 4%, before you write that on your paper?
To kind of get a look at the entire, the true tax cap limitation, and where you are allowable to set it, and what that would mean to your budget. You just saw now the possible additions. You called it, you wrote wish list.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not saying I'm not putting the board on any, please don't get me wrong, but if you put things at a 4%,
but that's not this presentation, I don't think. I think that is the next presentation. How do we need to get to where we are? And that's where you're going to tie in the programs.
Once I plug in the revenue on this slide, the revenue on with the tax levy, because that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big piece of this, a huge piece, right? $20 million of it. So do I put it at a 1.3? Do I put it at a 1.5? Do I put it in both? Or do I put it all five or six?
What I'm saying is I think that without certainty of the state number,
yep.
And now you got two things that are moving, right? Yep. State goes one way, we go the other way. It seems like it's a half-hour discussion without any real resolution. And what does that really mean, that those extra dollars? You're going to need to tie that to programs. Are you prepared? Will you be ready in 2 weeks to tie it to programs when you have two moving numbers?
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, again, maybe I'll just make it a little more simplistic on the upside of that from 1.4 to 4. It won't make it that complicated. I'll just maybe have one little slide about that to talk about that.
Yeah,
what I heard tonight about Mr. Caswell having his electives, or the enrichment program, you called it something else, higher challenge person at the elementary, that's where that would go. It would go directly towards that last slide.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about it. But that's really, in essence, everything else does not cost us anything, and that was the charge of the board.
But if you're going to have that band, 1.5 to 4,
mm-hmm.
Let's assume that without the state certainty, I don't really get what going with the 1.5 to 4 does, because it moves all over the map.
Well, right? So does the state, but I'm going to say we're going to make the state two numbers.
But we can't control the state. We can control the 1.5. We can control the 0.
So I want you to be prepared, and you'll be able to see it.
Yeah, but why can't we see them both? Either way, the state number is the state number.
Yeah, because the actual cap is
4. The 1.5 and the 4 are the numbers, and then what the state is or isn't. It can be taken out of both of them just as simple.
The numbers, I'm fine, but are you going to... I agree. The numbers, I'm absolutely fine, but are you going to tie... let's say, are you going to say, to go from 4 to 3, that is, what's the number, Carol? 50,000 or 100,000? 1%.
200,000.
4 to 3 is 200,000.
Right.
This is the first 200,000 that would go. 3 to 2, this is the second. So
I'll make it easy. Trust me. I'm gonna put it at a 1.5 or a 1.3. Which does the board want to see, a 1.5 or 1.3?
Let's 1.3 because the 2.2%.
So I'm gonna put it at a 1.3, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you a 1.3 and the high and low of what Cuomo might give us. That's one.
Okay.
Then I will also throw in a 4%. How's that? Just so you can
will
see.
Have the difference in programs between those two.
I'm gonna, with the difference of numbers, because it's going to be a number presentation. If you want to tie it into programs, I can absolutely tie it into the last slide you saw tonight with the administration.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm saying is without
FTEs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without tying it into the specific FTEs, the numbers, in my view, are irrelevant. Without tying it into specific programs.
Right.
If it's, you know, 42 million or 37 million is irrelevant without saying here's what you got to do to get to one way or the other. Am I missing it?
I'm making it a little more complicated. Just give me the numbers.
We'll
look at the numbers. If you want to tie it into the programs, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll tie it all into programs as well. Right now, what's going to happen is the Board of Education has already got many numbers in front of them for the last month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It shows right now what we need. And what we don't have, and it's about $1 million, somewhere in that range, right? So the board has seen that. With that, with the board now, I'm looking at what Governor Cuomo is going to give us. If Governor Cuomo gives us $500,000 more, now you're only behind $500,000, and that's when we begin at the end. And what the board has done every year is begin to look at everything we have and say, you know what? We still have to save more money. Pretty much been my career here in Senator Riches has been cutting. and trying to build the program at the same time. It started off with $2.7 million my first year coming here after a couple months. So that's still what we're doing here. Last year, it came together, I thought, wonderfully. We did it very, and hopefully as we get to the final, like right now we just found out that East Mauritius has a lot more students coming here than we ever expected. That difference was $150,000, thereabouts. So when I mentioned to you $1 million or $1.1 million, that of course lowers that amount. We watched Ms. Perkins from the first presentation to now, the TRS changed a little bit. And I believe there was $40,000 or $50,000 in there. So it's going to come all together at the end. I just want the board to be able just to see things, and as we get towards April, have as much knowledge as possible as they make decisions.
And different scenarios.
Especially when the bond now is another entity. If the board is going to go out to with a bond to this community, I'm sure they're going to look at, I would think, the tax cap limitation much differently. I would think so, than they would without that being that way. So the board's going to have to take that and wrestle with that as well.
I just feel that if we don't have certainty on the state number, I don't really feel that getting to the other numbers really is helpful. If you're talking plus or minus, but if you do, and you're going to go with the 1.3 and the 4%, and maybe you'd have another percentage in there somewhere split the difference, I would say, without tying what it means to get there programmatically, I don't see a value.
I disagree, because what we're talking about for the next presentation is an arithmetic presentation. After that, once we have all the arithmetic, once we have all the numbers, then we can do the philosophizing. And that's where we try to figure out, based off the presentations that we saw tonight, based off of what money we have available or don't have available, we need the arithmetic, so we got the numbers.
I agree with that. It's different financial scenarios, I think, is what we're talking about next time.
That's fine. I think the math is easy. That's absolutely fine.
Math is easy, unless you're in second grade.
But I also want the community, to be honest with you, I agree with you. I don't agree with you. You're probably better than I am. But I want this community to see it all as well, because then they can see the numbers and understand it. I'm just trying to get it out there.
But
I won't make it complicated. I'll do the best I can.
No. You want there are various choices. I agree with you. That's not what he's saying. He's saying just the numbers, and I don't.
But it is various choices, because it's whether or not we decide as a board to go closer to the 4%.
For what purpose? For what specific programs? That's the point is. If you can say we're going to go closer to a 4% because these five programs...
If we see how much money is there, then we can look at the list of those suggestions and say, then discuss that as a board of what we want to do.
Yes,
I agree. First, let's have the different scenario of figures, as Gary and I are saying.
Send the presentation.
I agree with what you're saying 100%, but that I don't think needs to be part of this next presentation. This next presentation should just be, here's the scenarios. And you know what? We don't even know if any of them will be true, because we know the state aid might float right there in the middle. So, we got this one low, this one high. But regardless, these are the scenarios. These are the dollar values we're talking about. Then we get to plug or unplug.
Yeah. All right. So let's see what we've got by next Friday. When will the presentation be done?
The presentation is on the 19th.
Right. But Yuri will be done with the presentation a week from this Friday. So
I'm going to start late tonight after we leave the jet.
Right.
Probably have it done by 3:40.
So let's take a look at it.
Okay.
All right. Are there any questions or comments from the community on matters not on the agenda tonight, general matters?
Yes. I'd just like to clarify some things. Mrs. Gillis had stated earlier about Dr. Hines and why she couldn't be here. And the president of the board said we should check with her. Well, I took it upon myself to check with her, and she did not ask me to keep anything confidential, but the simple fact of the matter was she simply asked that her resignation and her goodbye, as it were, be allowed to happen at the beginning of the meeting. Her family was coming. She felt she wanted to get it done early, and that she was told she could only speak at the end of the meeting, and that she felt, knowing how the meetings go, that for her family it would be too late. So this leads to one of the problems that we have, is that I don't know why, but somebody is being disingenuous with us. Somewhere, somehow, some way, and it's not just this comment, it's not just this issue, and I...
Larry, thank you. I can show you my text back and forth with her, telling her specifically, we heard your message, you can either, you'll either be after presentations or at general end, we'll see how the questions go in general tenor of meeting, don't rush. The beginning, she said, and I have to say this because you're attacking me personally.
No.
You are. At the beginning, she had sent me a note. What time are you looking at? I only asked because I'm working on a very sensitive CPS case and I'm still in my office. At which point I said, I'll call probably at the end. There's a bunch of presentations at the beginning. Only asking because my kids want to come, assuming at end of presentations. Said, heard your message. It will be either after presentations or at general end. We'll see how the questions go and general tenor of meeting. Don't rush, no problem. That's my text. You can come up and read it in front of me. You've attacked me personally, and I've just told you exactly what happened.
Very good. If it was.
Come read it, please.
And you can read mine.
Come read it. I don't care what yours says. You've attacked me personally. Come read my phone.
No, because now you're attacking me personally, and I'm telling
you, I believe you.
I'm acting on information given to me.
I believe you.
Okay.
Here, look at
so let's take it down a notch, son. You understand?
This is so disruptive of process, and for what purpose? I don't understand the purpose.
Because this board, Wendy, in the past, for years and years and years, has been disingenuous with this community, and
you've
been tired
personally for years, and I don't care.
Any other questions?
I have
yes.
Comments. Actually, I want to start off by saying thank you. I was very, very disconcerted by the outcome of the bond vote. I'm glad to see that it's not a dead issue. I thank you for putting up that survey. I know that was time-consuming at a time when you're going through the undaunting process of developing a budget, but yet you did that and you're reaching out to the community. I don't understand what went wrong with that bond. If you looked at the issues, to me, almost every single one of those was absolutely necessary. There were health and safety issues that were going to be addressed at the elementary school. There were additions that were going to be put up here at the middle school. I mean, at a time when they're really stressing development of a STEM curriculum, and you want to update the labs, you need classrooms, obviously these things are necessary. When these buildings were built, our graduating classes were somewhere in around 90, the numbers. The graduating class for 2014 was just under 150. So now you start taking those numbers. It's obvious that these things need to be done. When I look at it, you know, the bond, with a bond, you are being, I believe the majority of it is being financed by the state. So we as a district will only be paying back a small part of the loan. If these things need to be done, which obviously they do, I mean, they can't ignore them. They're going to need to be done. So now how are they going to be financed? If they're financed through a loan by the district, that means we will be picking up the entire cost of the loan. So looking at all these things, all I see is by not passing the bond, it's going to cost us more money as an individual taxpayer because we'll either have to pay for an entire loan. That's obviously got to be more money. I see lost revenue because if our buildings deteriorate, we are going to have less students coming from sending districts, and I'm not just talking about on the high school level coming from East Mauritius, but on the elementary school level. We have these autistic programs that have been growing, but I can't see a parent coming to see that building for the first time and seeing a lot of these problems wanting to send their children here. The sending districts are not going to want to send their kids here if the conditions continue to deteriorate. So these things do have to be addressed. And I'm not quite sure why, but I'm hearing more and more negative, as we just witnessed. That seems to be growing, but I don't believe that that's the majority of our district. I think we still have many, many supportive parents. My son just graduated in June. Up until that point, I have been very involved in the school through PTA, through the Red Devil Pride Club, through site-based, just going to different events. I hear that we have a lot of parents that are very, very supportive. And somehow, you have to appeal to those parents. You have to get them involved. The parents of the students that are going to these, the school, that, these kids are in conditions that where there are health and safety issues. Get them involved. Get them on board. To me, those are the kinds of things that you're really going to have to, concern yourself with. And squash the negativism, because to me, this negative attitude is poisoning our district. We've had a great district. It's been growing. There's been great progress. I want to see that continue. And I think the only way to continue is if we do put some money into the schools. And that's just it. So
I very much appreciate everything you said, and I apologize for everybody for the outburst before. I very much appreciate everything you said, and I agree with 95% of it. There's not really an instance, just to clarify something, where the district will pay the whole thing if we do other work. There's always an opportunity to have that money aidable. And I just want to walk through a bit about that, because I do agree with a lot of what you're saying. We need to do the work. As we said, in meetings past, we had conducted a survey. That survey is closed at this point now, right? And we don't have the data. The data is being aggregated, and you saw on the agenda tonight, one of the contracts is the aggregation of that data so that we can look at the survey results and kind of have an intelligent conversation about what the community is willing to support, why they voted the way that they voted in the last bond presentation. So our plans are, the board's plans are, to conduct future public discussions about exactly what needs to get done. There are various timelines for accepting a particular proposal or reevaluating a proposal and getting it on a budget, so that we can make a decision in a timely fashion. As I've stated all along, the goal is to have a vote on what we believe to be the right thing at the next election. There's a variety of reasons for that. One, I agree with you completely that the work needs to get done. Two, you walk around, there's leaks, there's various things, and I agree that, people looking, aesthetics has an impact on the people that come to this district, the revenue that we see from other places. Plus, our kids are here. My kids are here more than their home. And there are instances and places where they are that I think should be better environment for our kids. So in my view, and we're going to talk about this more at the next meeting, we need to have at the final, at the budget vote, we need to have some type of determination. What exactly that is and what will go into that is something that we don't know yet, because, as I said, we haven't seen the survey. We want to see the results. We want to see the data aggregated.
It does have to move, Ms. Finnegan, thank you very much. I appreciate all your comments as well. It does have to move pretty quickly, so the community should know that. So I would not be surprised if the Facilities Committee reconvenes very quickly. These discussions have to happen because we have to have publications out early, and I believe the first week of April, if we're going to move forward with some numbers in there.
And those are like bond rules where you have to publish, you need to notify the public at a specific period of time before the vote.
I think in the next couple of weeks, if you are interested, contact any of us about the Facilities Committee. You do not have to be a member to come and listen. I think it's extremely important. I know myself as a family and have children here, want to hear exactly what's going to be said there. So that's the next couple of weeks.
But on the negativity point, listen, it is what it is. I think we just keep moving forward. I personally feel 100% comfortable that everything that this board is working towards and this administration is working towards are the right things. I think that everything we're doing, everybody to a person, is the heart's in the right place, the plans are in the right place. It is what it is. You will always deal with that. And I'm not talking about anybody individual. anybody individually. There is some type of negativity at times. If you believe you're doing the right thing and you continue to move forward, that's all I think any of us can do. So, anybody else have any other questions? Yes.
Josh, in August, at the end of August 2014, we had a Title I meeting. And at that point, at the Title I meeting, we were told that funds for the Title I had already been decided because the budget had already been passed and the funds were already spent. So at this point at the meeting, we had discussed a possibility of changing when that meeting happens. And it was a consensus. Mr. Sutter was there. It was consensus out of the five people that showed up that we'd like to see that meeting move till April. And at this point, I have not heard anything about a Title I meeting happening. Can you tell me when that is going to happen?
Can I answer?
Yeah.
I believe, Mr. Soto, correct me if I'm wrong, the plan is to have that in April. Is that correct?
That is the plan.
And we had a problem with the way it was brought out. There are certain stakeholders that are involved in that meeting. And it was put on the school website 2 days prior to the meeting. So my concern is, and I had strongly brought this out to Mr. Soto at the meeting, it was run by John Allen and Mr. Soto, and I had spoken on the fact that we have to hit all stakeholders that belong at that meeting. And so a lot of our stakeholders might be, there's different stakeholders, but there's ESL students that if they don't speak English, they would, and they don't look at the computer, they're not going to know that meeting. So I think it's very important that we, when we do have this meeting, we plan on how we get the word out to all stakeholders and not limited to just a certain population.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions or comments?
Do you have the list?
I left it on.
You left it for me? Motion to adjourn to next meeting will be here on March 19th at 7:30.
That's a Thursday,
right? Yeah.
Yes.
I did that math and I was like,
Thursday. March 19th, 7:30 in this library. I hope you can all attend. Motion to adjourn to executive session for the purposes of discussing the following. Discussions regarding proposed, pending, or current litigation. Collective negotiations under the Taylor Law with the CMPA, medical financial credit history of any person or corporation or matters leading to the appointment, promotion, demotion, discipline, or termination of a particular person or corporation, other matters to disclosure of which would result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy, and the preparing, grading, or administration of examinations. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Second.